original counsels, deep in the original thoughts of God going back before the creation of the world, before the foundation of the world, they agreed that Christ, the Son of God, would be the offering that would bring man back and make him free from the problem of sin. And that the Holy Spirit would apply this, and that the Father would make his Son to be sin. That on the cross, the Father would do something, and this agreement, when it is revealed and as it unfolds, you can imagine the wonder of the angels, but also we should also marvel as men at what God has conceived. Now, the Bible speaks of the mystery hidden from the dawn of ages, that Christ should so love the world, that God should so conceive this plan, that God should have such a plan to save the world, to save the human race. When we talk about the everlasting covenant, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about something so wonderful, so beautiful, so full of love and commitment. You know what C.S. Lewis said in one of his novels? There's this whole event when there's this exchange between the devil and a believer, and he's trying to convince this believer that God doesn't exist. In the horrible moment of temptation, he's trying to convince this believer that God doesn't exist. And the believer answers and says, well, he said, I don't know anymore. He's so confused by what the devil is saying. He said, I don't know anymore, but he said, maybe you're right, and maybe none of all this exists, and maybe all... He said, but one thing I know is that the world that doesn't exist according to you is better than the world that you're offering me. And I prefer to live for that world. Now, of course, he's describing a Christian in extreme temptation who suddenly sees that what the Bible is describing is the most sublime, wonderful truth. It deserves to be true by its very nature, because it glorifies the Godhead. Now, sometimes when I consider other religions and hear what they say, I realize they don't deserve to be true. You can hear the ring of truth in the Bible. It must be true. It deserves to be true. It is right. It glorifies God. It reveals God as glorious and wonderful. The other religions, they're not true. There are no gods. There's only one God. And they don't have this revelation of this God of love. Well, that's the everlasting covenant. And you can read the notes I put there on that. But the New Covenant. Now, the New Covenant is going to be our subject really from now on. And I put there just a few things there, very short. The purpose, to make man in the image of God. The method, total dependence on God. The method, the blood of Christ. And the symbol of the New Covenant, the communion. Now, we're going to look at this now for the rest of this evening. We're going to turn to the book of Hebrews. There are two books in the writings of the New Testament which particularly look at this subject of the New Covenant. That is Galatians and Hebrews. Now, of course, Hebrews is the much bigger book, and really it's got much more detail on this subject than Galatians. Galatians has got some very important truths there that we'll also look at in our last session. But tonight we're going to spend a lot of time looking in Hebrews. The book of Hebrews, by its very title, was written to Hebrews. Okay, that's a very profound comment. And you think, wow, we've come to this tremendous seminar to find that out. Well, yes, well, thank you. You can heard it here first. Hebrews was written to Hebrews. Well, what does this mean? It means it was written to people of a Jewish background. And one of the reasons the book of Hebrews was written was because there was a kind of temptation that was particularly strong for Christians of Jewish background. You see, in the period after the church was started in AD 30, the church grew, but the first Christians were Jews. Now, in the Roman Empire, there was a law that everybody had to acknowledge Caesar as Lord. Now, this was not difficult because all religions in the Roman Empire were polytheistic, which means that they all worship lots of gods. So if you said to somebody, you know, you've got to worship Caesar on one day a year, they would say, no problem. I'll do it 10 days a year if you want. You know, they're no problem. And they'll worship Ganesh on Saturday and, I don't know, whoever they wanted they could worship, because there was a multiplicity of gods. They would worship Diana and Zeus. And so what's one more among friends? Let's have a few more. You know, it just makes the party a bit more numerous. We want more friends at this party. That, they didn't care. But the Jews were very strict. There is one God. And they could not say Caesar is Lord. So Rome, the Roman authorities, gave to the Jewish nation exemption from worshipping Caesar. It was the only exemption. They were free. They didn't have to worship Caesar. And when the Christians came along in AD 30, and now Jews were beginning to be embrace the Messiah and beginning to be in the New Covenant and so on, they didn't stop being Jewish. Why? Well, it wasn't a conflict. Christ was a Jew. Christ was the Jewish Messiah. He was the fulfillment of all the promises in the Old Testament. For the first believers like Peter, James, John, Paul, and so on, there was no difference. They were fulfilled Jews. In one way, the word Christian only partly applies to them, because they were fulfilled Jews. They were not changing their religion. They were fulfilling their religion. So there's a sense in which the word Christian doesn't fully communicate what they had come into. And although the word Christian now tends to mean Gentiles as opposed to Jews, that's wrong. And really, they were all one. But as the things developed, it slowly became clear to the Roman authorities that the Jews and the Christians were actually separate groups. And this increased more and more as time went on. In AD 64, there was a fire in Rome, and it swept through the city for 3 days, destroyed most of the city. After 3 days, the wind changed, and the fire started again, and it absolutely destroyed the city. The people at first blamed Nero, Caesar. And he, realizing this, quickly then turned and said, no, it was the Christians did this. And that sparked off the first major persecution of the Christians. And that was actually the fiery trial that Peter wrote about in his first epistle. The first letter of Peter is addressed to the Christians who are about to go through a fiery trial. Peter is prophesying this first outbreak of persecution. And in AD 64, there was this terrible, fierce wave of persecution. It was so awful. We know that they were fed to the lions, and they were, on one evening, if you ever go to Rome, I've never been to Rome, but apparently just a stone's throw from the Roman Colosseum, you can see the gardens of Nero. He had gardens, and he had a special party there, and he lined the tree, the walkways in his garden with Christians who were painted with tar and then set alight as living torches. What Nero did was one of the most terrible persecutions that the Christians went through.